Meet and Three is back. We're kicking off our fourth season and celebrating HRN's 10th anniversary with a very special episode about our home, Brooklyn.
Roberta's was such an interesting place with such a strong gravitational pull. It attracted all these different groups.
The neighborhood has changed a lot over the past decade, from its culinary renaissance to the complicated implications of gentrification.
I would say the majority of the people who are members of our co-op definitely have a certain purchasing power, are mostly white, and we are trying to change that.
We're taking you on a journey that spans the birthplace of food radio to buzzy neighborhood pollinators to the transformative health journey of our borough president.
That was my moment of, you know, wow, someone has thrown me a life raft and I'm going to take it.
Subscribe to Meet and Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
One House is a recruitment firm providing a tailored talent search to hospitality operators throughout the country. Empowered Hospitality provides human resources services to the restaurants and hotel sector, empowering operators with knowledge, guidance, and time. Together, we are Recruit, Retain, Relax.
Recruit, Retain, Relax. Recruit, Retain, Relax. Recruit, Retain, Relax. Retain, Relax.
And here we are once again. Recruit, Retain, Relax. Mike Hewitt here from One House and Sarah Deal from Empowered Hospitality. And we're here to discuss the current staffing dilemma in the hospitality world. Where is everybody, right? Where are all these employees that we're looking for? What's trending? How can operators react and adapt to survive? Our main focus is on recruitment and retention, how to find them, how to keep them. Sarah and I operate national hospitality recruiting and HR consulting companies servicing all sectors, from Michelin starred to mom and pop startups, giving us a unique outlook and intel on this topic. And now let's welcome our guest today, Kristen Vincent, owner of Bowery Sweetheart Sell Rose and Home Sweet Home, among other sexy brands, and Hiro Nishida, president of Plan Do Si America, operators of high-end concepts from New York to Bali, Hawaii, and of course their hometown, Japan. We're going to start right off with the recruit section of the show. And really just starting off, we can start off with Kristen. Regarding openings, what sites have you found most effective in recruiting your opening team?
Well, first of all, good morning, Mike and Sarah.
Good morning.
So this is actually my first time working with a recruiting firm with yours. Doreen Winkler, my consulting sommelier, introduced us, and obviously, you know, I took the first two people that you sent to me, so it was a pretty good experience.
Thank you. That is good. Wow, two for two.
Two for two. First two.
And we have to thank Doreen, who's here with us as well, right? Sommelier extraordinaire, for making that connection. So it's all about connecting the dots here today.
Yeah, what are you going to do now? I took your two best employees.
Right, now we got to find more. It goes back to the original thing. Where do we find these people, right?
Where do we?
We have a factory in the back. So how many months pre-opening do you start hiring? What's kind of a nice safe spot for you in your operation?
I mean, I think we're not a corporate group, so it's sort of like who's coming to me and who fits what we're looking for at the time. This is our fourth restaurant that we're opening in Montauk. So I already do have a team built and a sort of pyramid of how, in a certain sense, a hospitality group where there are things, you know, the top tier person running it, and then it goes down from there. So when you were introducing me to someone, they could have fit in any of the four places.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes we're searching for someone that's very specific to a role. Other times, it's just someone that would fit your brand and your culture. And then as an operator, you get to decide where the pieces of the puzzle go. So that's good. And there's obviously no right or wrong answers here. Some people scramble right before an opening, and they're just like, I need everyone. We're opening in a month. Other people are really proactive and start 3 or 4 months ahead. And obviously, we're here to guide them with that, right? You don't want to start too soon where people get demotivated, not doing much, right?
No, I have to say, we did start looking very soon, but it wasn't until I met you and I came to when Doreen told me about your firm, that you have outstanding clients. Really? Thank like, you. I'm surprised because I was very hesitant in coming to you. I was like, this is never going to work, that you're going to find me some good people. It's always so corporate.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right on the money.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. And coincidentally enough, Hero next to me here was one of the founding clients of One House. So he was one of the first, the top three clients that we ever had. So a lot of our success goes back to our humble beginnings of just having just two or three clients and working our way up the industry. And Plan to See was, you know, fantastic for us and continues to be.
You seem like tapped into what people are looking for right now.
Thank you.
Mike, I'm curious, just from your perspective, when a client or a restaurant group is trying to find a recruiter to work with, I think that cultural match question is really important in terms of, you know, Kristen, you felt that vibe with One House.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So what are some pointers you have for restaurant owners who are looking to partner with a third party? How can they figure out, amongst all of the headhunters that are out there, like which firm matches their philosophy best?
Absolutely. It's just like what we do, looking for the right match culturally. It starts right from there, right? Client recruiter fit. And a lot of different variables. Some people are looking for more corporate, buttoned up, traditional type recruiters. Other people are looking for more hustlers on the street, knocking on every door recruiter. You might want a small boutique team that can really spend time with you and really understand your needs, and not be one of like 3,000, you know, recs that they have on their board. So it really depends on what they're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say is there are so many different firms that all have kind of different focuses and different specialties. And if you are an operator, that there is a firm that's going to be perfect for you. Like that boutique kind of like bespoke service that One House gives is a perfect fit for a company like yours, Kristen. And I think that there are other firms out there that aren't as tailored in their approach. So it's, I think it's just really understanding that.
Yeah, and they and those other firms probably have other competitive advantages that we may lack. So it's just it's just finding the right fit.
And sometimes, knowing you have options.
Yeah, and sometimes it is the right fit and sometimes it isn't. And you know, we're also the first to raise our hand and say, whoops, you know, I think we're out of our comfort zone for this search, let's say, right? So that's a benefit there. As far as turnover, what do you think, or what do you anticipate your turnover could be as you're opening this space? I know that's like looking into the future, but have you experienced that before? You open a place, you think, wow, this is a dream team, and then boom, you know, people start falling off.
Not really.
Good. Good answer.
We do sort of have a dream team. Most of my employees have been very loyal. I've had some of them for 13 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very rare that someone leaves, and then when they do, it's just sort of they've outgrown it.
Sure. And I guess seasonality could play a role in it, considering maybe the Montauk bit might be seasonal as far as winter goes. That might be a different game.
It can to a small point, but who knows? We might be there all year.
Okay.
What are some of the things that you think have kept people with you for so long?
I think loyalty. We're from the top, we're all passionate about what we're doing. Passion before, like, even making money actually makes us money. So I think people, like, feel that, and they like staying around for that.
Sure.
That's awesome.
No, that makes
sense. That's such a rare thing.
I think it is now.
Yeah.
Really.
It is. As far as third parties, though, right? A lot of people want to internalize and have their own department in-house that they can really nurture from day one. Do you feel like you have or you'd like to lean on a third party operator, someone that maybe can outsource your accounting or your PR or your HR, things like that?
Yeah, I do outsource accounting currently and bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously as we grow, we can always use HR.
Yes, you can. Yeah, and it's sometimes it is about the size of the company and your purchasing power. If you can't afford to hire someone internally for, you know, a serious salary that is going to just focus on your business, or outsourcing someone that can spend X amount of hours doing your work, but you don't have them on your payroll, and you're a little bit more nimble as a company as you're growing up.
Well, one of the things too, talking about opening specifically today,
third parties have the ability to ramp up right away. And so part of what it mitigates is that last minute scramble of, oh, we need a bookkeeper. Well, you have one. You hired a firm who can do that.
Right.
And I think that's really brilliant. And that's part of the flexibility that third parties can offer. When we talk about recruitment, it's even thinking about how a third party could potentially supplement the team that you're trying to bring on for your opening. So I do think it enables some creativity in terms of your opening staff and definitely that flexibility as you grow too, which...
No, for sure. Someone like me who, you know, I've always been just doing this myself to meet you and then now you, Sarah, and then learning about your HR that I can outsource you to do that. It's like, it's eye-opening for me to be like, oh, okay, I can do this better instead of having to do it all myself or have my GM work on that, but he needs to work on the opening at the same time. Yeah. Sometimes it's like too much for one person.
It does definitely speak of the times that we're dealing with right now where everyone's trying to find a shortcut of how to survive, right? How to stay in business, right? First rule of business, how do you stay in business when all these wage increases and all these different variables are weighing down the P&L where you're, you know, the bottom line, I mean, you're in single digits if you're making it. How can you cut the corners without the guest experience suffering? Sometimes it is about not having a heavy P&L labor cost weighing you down and outsourcing certain things, but still keeping the guest experience, the people touching the tables, you know, where they need to be, right? That's where the dollars are spent better. So something to think about in today's world. Are we going to talk about millennials today? We always somehow end up talking
about... We'll sprinkle them in, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They usually come up.
And then they usually leave. Just kidding. No, we'll talk about them later. But yeah, let's talk to Hiro. Hiro, similar or same questions really about the openings. I mean, what have you found as far as sites or you know, other third party help to staff your places? Because again, and if you want to give an overview a little bit about Plan Do C, because it's vast. I
mean. So we currently operate 20 restaurants in the 7 different cities, New York, DC, Chicago, Miami, LA, Hawaii, and San Francisco. So each city is a different hiring strategies. So we use a different internet recruiting site, which is Indeed and WorkPop and Craigslist. And this is a general strategy that first we work to look for the talents in the market. And then just before 2 months or 2.5 months before opening, we are looking out how many people we have hired internally and how many we have been able to capture this talent from internet. And then if we need another qualified talent that we haven't hired, then we work with One House or these recruiting company to be able to make a strong team.
No, that makes a lot of sense, and it's a smart strategy, right? I have sometimes told clients to do that. Like, look on your own, right? Give it a go yourself. We totally respect and we empathize on what recruiting dollars can do to a bottom line, right? So by all means, usually our best clients are the ones that have tried on their own, haven't succeeded, and then have come back to us or to other recruiting firms, you know, to then supplement their search.
Yeah. So
that makes sense.
I think the Craigslist, you pay, what, $45 to put on, and... it's good in New York and Hawaii, but doesn't work well in LA and some other cities. And WorkPop is they hold a resume on the site. So I think each website have a different strength. And so, you know, employer have to really look into what are the strengths of each companies.
I'm curious what you found are some of the major differences by city as well, because I think the type of person you're hiring is very different from place to place sometimes.
So Miami is very Latin, relaxing, laid back. it's not easy to find. I mean, every city is a different challenge, but Miami is more seasonal, you know. So you have to work around how do you engage your employee through this seasonal mode of this employees. And New York is has changed because we have this the age group, the 35 higher, and now millennium. Now we have the Generation Z. So we have three different generations that are working for our company. So each layer of people have a different interest, that work mode, and also the income passions. So we have to design a way that makes sure the benefit and all the round of support system that help these people to work longer and engage longer. And again, Hawaii is another very difficult, you know, it's the unemployment is less than 3%. So, and the 20 hours, the minimum that over 20 hours, you have to provide a benefit in insurance. So each city has very different, even United States. Mm-hmm. So we just have to work around, you know, depends on each market. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the questions, this is really for both of you. I think the number one complaint that I hear from operators is hiring back of house staff, line cooks specifically. So have you found any tricks, anything we don't know about where to find great back of house staff?
So I feel that there's a few very important things that you have to have an employee engage your employees, which is one is a clear incentive program that that tied to accountability and deliverable. And so our front of house leadership, which is general manager, gets 30% of incentive. And also back of house leadership is also get 30% of incentive. So they have a clear guideline that if you hit those check mark, you are able to, even back of house, you're able to get 30% of incentive. And the other one is because we have 20 restaurants in United States. So on a young generation, they will like to move around. So we always check with all these, each employees that, where their career path and what are their passions. So we want to make sure that we design the career path that fit to each employees as much as we can. And the third one is surprising. A lot of restaurant managers, they don't understand the profit loss statement. So we always encourage, and also we train the AGM to GM to open all the profit loss statement. So everybody understand every line from top line to bottom line. So hoping that in 3 years, if they want to open their own restaurants, they can do by themselves.
That makes a lot of sense. I want to touch on something you mentioned, and we've talked about this in different shows, right? What can you do as a company for the quality of life and to nurture your staff, but without bending over backwards? It doesn't have to turn into like a Google office, right? Where like a million perks and all sorts of things going on. But, you know, here we just touch on a couple. Obviously, an incentive, right? At the end of the day, some of them care about their bottom line, like their pocket. How can they have a little bit of that in their power, right? If they do a good job, they have certain metrics that they hit, they can actually have a substantial, by the way, anyone listening, 30% potential is quite aggressive, right? So it's very, it's a great incentive if someone can hit it. And if you're looking at 30, maybe you only hit 25, 20. 20 is still, as market goes, pretty nice. So if someone can actually hit that 30, and you're also addressing maybe their nomadic tendencies, right? They can actually move to different locations within the same company, understanding the brand and the ethos of Plan Do C, that's another huge advantage, right? For some people that might want to see different parts of the world. So you're hitting two points there that any company could really look into and implement into their own company to address and to attract new talent. Mm-hmm. I think it's important. So
yeah, one of the questions I'm actually going to ask a bit later, but it's about retention, and I think it fits in pretty perfectly now, is what do people see as a big hit in terms of your compensation, your benefits, the jobs that you're offering? Are there things that you see candidates come in and they're just thrilled that you offer X?
So surprisingly, this all the generations that we hire from 23 to 50, 60, benefit is very important. We find that medical insurance is very important. We find that the visions and dentist and 401k or life insurance, all these baseline of living healthy is a very important, rather than you know, you make $150,000, $200,000 income. So we provide all of these items. in the United States. And also in Japan, we actually provide any employee that work more than 5 years, we provide 100% free bracelet. So because the smile is extremely important and in our business, so how can we support and encourage all of our employees to have a best smile
that's a
to
first.
Our customers?
Yeah, that's
braces
fantastic.
Benefits. That is pioneering right there.
Well, and I think a good point you brought up, Hiro, is that we forget sometimes that different age groups of our employees have different needs. And we think about benefits as one complete package that kind of fits everyone. So maybe thinking in terms of how can we tailor our benefits mm-hmm. to appeal to all the different groups of employees mm-hmm. generationally that we're hiring, I think it's really brilliant. And it's something that we don't tend to see. How about you, Kristen? What are some things you mentioned before, some of the traits that have really drawn people to you and have kept them working with you for a long time? So is there anything that stands out in terms of candidates being really excited about something that you're offering them?
Well, we're still young, and we have less than 70 employees, I think, between all four bars and restaurants. But I think what we do, because we have such a small amount of staff, is that we can individually go to each person and find out what their needs are still. So, you know, we're taking care of people along the way for what they need. Like, if they have a family and they can't work at nights, we'll, like, work with them to figure out what times is best for them and their family.
That's great. I mean, that's personalized, and some companies can be so micro when it comes to that, right? One person at a time mm-hmm. versus having, like, a policy that affects everybody. So it's really good when you can actually dig deep and do something that's personalized when it's benefits.
So I want to add that's very important, because I remember that Jack Welch, he said when he was a CEO of GE, he knew the family structure of 700 employees. So he's very into the detailed conversation in general, mm-hmm. that talking with the family structures and hobbies and interests. So through this conversation is your more understanding how can we help and support employee to work happier and work more exciting situations.
Correct. Like the actors, models, musicians also on your team, they want their time off, you know, and that's part of the understanding that we have with them when they come in. Hey, my band's going on tour for a month. I'm like, okay.
Cover your shift.
Go. Cover your shift.
Cover your shift. Get it in writing. But it is important to mention that this is a two-way street, right? We spend a lot of time and we talk about, you know, what can we do for them? What can we do for them? The employees need to reciprocate. It's important that they need to put the hours, the commitment, the professionalism, take the job seriously and do a good job. And an example like that, make sure that you're proactive, you cover your shifts, you don't come back to the manager with, you know, crying with issues, things like that. So it is a two-way street, and it's important to know that, right? We can't just bash a generation or constantly be looking at how can we coddle them and make sure that they're okay. It is really up to them as well to step up to the plate and do a good job.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things that has been kind of a running theme through our past couple of shows is that idea of purpose, and really clearly articulating the purpose of your business mm-hmm. so that your employees can decide if they align with that. Mm-hmm. And if they're passionate about that in the same way that you are, they'll naturally be excited about coming to work and doing a great job. And to your point, Kristen, maybe their purpose is being a professional musician, and the job mm-hmm. complements that.
Mm-hmm. It allows them to follow that dream.
Yeah, right? Understanding sometimes someone's purpose is not work. It's what happens outside of work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or sometimes that even brings in more contacts to your own business, right? For example, one of our managers in Montauk is a model with John Varvatos, and we've been in talks with them about them providing the uniforms for us.
Wow.
Right? Nice. So just because of that contact, they're bringing in someone else. So
that makes sense.
That's fantastic.
Rock and roll in Montauk.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very cool. Mm. As far as any retention bits, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, sure. Well, so one of the things, I did want to go back to the job sites question, because we touched on it briefly, and Hiro, you mentioned three sites you were using: Indeed, WorkPop, Craigslist. So we've done a couple projects recently where we've hired an entire opening staff for a restaurant. So we hired 50 line cooks in the months of December and January. And what we have found is there are a plethora of different sites, but there are definitely certain sites that work better for certain positions and in certain markets. So if we're looking for a line cook, we might start with culinary agents, or we might start with Craigslist, to be honest with you. Whereas for front of house, we might try something different. There's Harry, there's Snagajob. I mean, these are all different options. And something to think about is, rather than trying to blanket six different platforms, knowing that most people who are looking for a job might post their resume on multiple platforms, it's choosing one or two and reposting regularly to see what days are better, what times are better. So, you know, we'll post, like, Wednesday evening tends to be a good time, but we're not posting Fridays because everybody's at work.
Totally.
So, you know, that I would say, rather than, because it's expensive too for a small business to post on six different job sites, it's really tailoring it to one or two sites, experimenting, holding on to those posts for 30 days or 45 days, and then maybe switching to a different site.
It's more of a question for you guys, actually. Do you remember around 2005 or 6 with Craigslist, if you put an ad out, you'd have a line like 3 blocks long?
What happened?
Where did everyone go?
I think that part of it is candidates migrating from site to site, right? So, for example, we just recently posted a job on Glassdoor. I had never posted a job on Glassdoor, and we got just
slammed
with fantastic candidates. So it does evolve over time, and I think it has something to do with how the platform's marketing itself, how they're, you know, reaching out to candidates, how word travels. Harry was the place to hire a couple years ago, and it's really not anymore. So I think that's really part of it. It's still great, but, you know, I would say use it with another couple of sites to supplement that. And part of it is the job market. I mean, when unemployment is this low, that means that people are taking their jobs in industries other than hospitality. When unemployment is high, hospitality gets an influx of people looking for kind of a temporary
A fix. Role. They're looking for a Band-Aid. But to answer your question, I mean, again, back in the day, there weren't that many options, right? It was Craigslist or die. I mean,
well, yes, Craigslist or die. Or now what I'm finding is that I'm actually getting interviewed. I'm not interviewing anymore. That's interviewing me to see if my times work for them.
Well, that is back to the two-way street thing, and that's really important, and that's a great point you made. The tables have shifted a little bit, right?
A lot.
When back in the day, right, it was very much you were making, you know, you had all the questions, you had all the things. They would just answer when spoken to, forget it. Now it's like they come with an agenda, with a schedule, with
and late or not at all.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that is another variable, right? The seriousness of, again, we're not going to label a generation, but for some reason, that has become a little lax. Add to that a little bit of a lower entrance into culinary schools, right? A lot of the schools are feeling a crunch of, as far as like low student volume, which means that less are coming out of school. Some of them are coming out with certain expectations. They're getting crushed within 6 months, deciding maybe I'll just do like web development, forget hospitality.
Right. And you can go on Instagram right now and call yourself a chef and actually be like a popular chef and open your own restaurant.
And then
why go to
school? Out of business 6 months later because you have absolutely no background in culinary.
It happens.
But hey, you follow the dream.
But it's been successful too.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So a lot of people... you know, maybe without the years and years of upbringing in a kitchen from dishwasher up to chef de cuisine, you know, they're kind of taking that fast, you know, highway to get there. And some are winging it or faking it till they make it. And others are just are realizing that it's not that easy. And then they're kind of backtracking and moving to another sector altogether. So we're losing that population from hospitality. So what happens then? Now you have a much less supply that everyone's fighting over, right? They're like hungry piranhas trying to grab that... that employee, now that shifts the, you know, the leverage. Now that employee has more power because he or she is being courted by many different options.
Great.
So now it puts more pressure on the clients to give them as much as they can to attract that person, right?
It's like finding a unicorn now. Someone who's dedicated, experienced, and hardworking.
Exactly. So then, so then we talk about this, right? You know, how do we find people, right? That's one element of what we talked about. Now that person's hired, they're under your domain, quote unquote. How do you keep them there, right? How? Mm-hmm. Why would they not start looking 2 or 3 months later? Are you treating them well? Are you giving them that, you know, career progression where they can move up to different roles? Are you providing continuing education or the Kaizen, you know, the Japanese philosophy we were talking about the other day, as far as making them better at what they're doing, right? A better person, a better, you know, citizen, a better hospitality employee, all those things that make them want to stay with you and not start looking somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and one of the key things too, Hiro was talking about is, it was interesting, Mike, I think you asked him about where he was finding talent, and he talked about retention. He said, mm-hmm. basically, we're keeping the great people that we have. And I think that the burden now is on employers to keep great people. Mm-hmm. It's really changed where you can't just go out to the marketplace and find 5 employees immediately. You really have to, mm-hmm. you know, keep them around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fireable offenses of like 5 to 8 years ago are no longer apply, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to do something pretty bad at this point. If you're a good employee, but you have one little slip up, right? Back in the day, you know, you get the axe.
You're not getting fired for coming in late anymore,
right?
You know?
Now it's like, you know, unfortunately, we don't want to lower standards, but you know, it's like, you can't lose this person. Well, right now.
So, Hiro, what's the funniest story you have with an employee that has that you've kept that has done something?
It's a tough one.
And
maybe just to add on to that, because you know, Plando C is a very peculiar company. I was blessed to be able to travel with Hiro throughout Japan and see their operations there, and it was mind blowing. You know, the way that they treat people and the warm hospitality that you feel. But a lot of that, how do you bring that to the States, right? To a different mentality. And pretty much every restaurant in Plando C here in America has a little bit of that thread, that Japanese thread. There's at least a couple, right, sprinkled in there that are native Japanese coming into the country. And sometimes, yeah, there are expectations, there are levels of, you know, their bar, I guess, is at a different level. And sometimes maybe the American employee doesn't reach there or doesn't understand why they're asked to do certain things. So maybe like a native or American employee has done something that just didn't fit in with the Japanese omotenashi.
That's another difficult question.
I'm not answering.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, I know you're thinking of something right now.
That's a difficult question, yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things I can say, because we are obviously dealing with a lot of employee relations at Empowered Hospitality on behalf of our clients, we often encounter employees who let life interfere with work. And I think one of the biggest areas I've seen increased flexibility is understanding that life happens sometimes and offering at least one chance or a couple chances if life gets in the way. Mm-hmm. Things like somebody no call, no show because, you know, they had a family member emergency or they couldn't get childcare or
that's,
you know,
life.
I find that, you know, it makes sense to be a little more forgiving now, because if that employee is generally pretty committed, who knows what you're going to find if you fire them and have to go look for a replacement. So I think that's maybe a little more PC example, but that's one area I see a big difference. So turning to the retention side, just really briefly, we've actually already talked about quite a bit, but I was curious if there's anything that either of you do in the first 30 days or so of operation, once you've opened, to really reinforce the people who are part of the team. So you've gone through, you know, usually pre-opening, it's very warm and fuzzy. Mm-hmm. It's all about culture. It's exciting. And then you get into
the honeymoon phase.
And the honeymoon phase is over. So what do you do anything at that point to help kind of cement the people who you really want to stay with you?
So one thing, again, you know, robust training is very important. And after this robust training, it's every day small effort counts. So we believe in pre-shift meeting is something that you do every day. And through this pre-shift meeting, acknowledging every employees and do small trainings that, you know, keep energy high. And these are very important, you know, there's no magical strategies. Is every day you look in everybody's eyes and make sure their employees are happy? And what are the takeaway that any challenge that from previous day that you had, you share that. We share the challenge together. And again, these are small layer of efforts, accounts, know.
Can you talk a little bit about the philosophy of Kaizen and how that applies to the business?
So Kaizen is basically ability to edit the current service. So how can we do a little bit better than yesterday? How can we do better service than the yesterday? So it's the skill of edit is basically the Kaizen. Mm-hmm. That's the philosophy of the Kaizen, yeah.
And my understanding is there's some welcome dialogue with the employees as part of that, right?
Yes. So we encourage, of course, the employees to come up an idea. I always say our hero is someone who brings idea, bring to the tables, not just complaining or turn down somebody's ideas. But always bring ideas. The suggestion is extremely important.
Yeah. Kristen, do you see that as well? Just welcoming feedback from employees, just having those face-to-face conversations?
Oh, my gosh. It's the worst feeling to have someone come to you and tell you what's wrong with everything. That's my biggest pet peeve. Come on, you're going to already know. Trust me, I already know what's wrong. Okay. It's like, tell me how to fix it. How are you going to fix it? So, yeah, that's my number one, like, don't come to me with that. Mm-hmm. They know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that, one of the things we talk about in a more formal way is what we call stay interviews. It's really just sitting down and having coffee mm-hmm. with the people on your mm-hmm. team.
Oh, I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, yeah. At least, to a certain level, I can still go to, you're calling it coffee, drinks, or dinner, or something with a group of the management, or just something that keeps it on a slightly more personal level, and you get to talk with them, and then from there, they take that down to a different level of employees, and they take them out, or they go get drinks together. Mm-hmm. Just
it trickles down from there.
Yeah, just keeping some family. Like I would definitely say that pretty much everyone that works for us thinks of it as a family.
Yeah, and when we talk about purpose, too, just allowing them to feel like they're part of shaping the company.
Yeah.
I think that is, that's Kaizen. That's part of that spirit of welcoming conversation.
It's a little bit of ownership and accountability, right? They're coming up with certain ideas, maybe with some solutions, right? Yes. So then depends on whether they're successful or there's a failure there. At least, okay, we all came up with, anyone have a great idea, raise your hand, right?
Right, and it's usually a great idea.
And then you decide what the best course of action, but at least you either go down in flames or you succeed as a team, as opposed to a dictator saying you're doing this, you're doing that. So
that's why I think it's important that the GM, GM understand your financial situations. Mm-hmm. It's like if you go to doctors and you have a blood test, and if doctor says, "How am I doing?" and the doctor say, "Doing great," tell me a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Same thing if you understand the financial from top line to covers to cost of goods to payrolls, all the expenses and the bottom line, so then how do you need to communicate with your staff? Mm-hmm. So we show every number that every employee wants to know. It's open, so it's a very open book. So GM to AGM, everybody understands your situations.
There's a common goal.
Strength.
Right?
Yeah, there's accountability, deliverable, execution, and accountable. This cycle is very important, so that the staff effort is rewarded in every month.
That's absolutely right. And I feel like we're just getting into this amazing conversation. We're going to take a quick break, though. Mm-hmm. And when we do come back, we can have another word, and we're going to do a quick... Little quick fire challenge. So we'll be right back.
Setting the table begins long before the glassware is polished, before the china is set, spotless, on the table. Setting the table begins with selecting the right people for your team. Everything flows from the expertise, innate hospitality, and critical thinking of the people who act as ambassadors to your guests every day. With One House, a recruitment firm providing a tailored talent search to hospitality operators, finding the right people is a simple recipe. One House identifies, contacts, and interviews prospective talent and conducts pre-hire reference checks. One House also assists in curating chef tasting menus and liaises between candidate and operator throughout the interview process. Empowered Hospitality delivers human resources solutions to growing hospitality companies, presenting solutions that empower owners and operators with the knowledge, guidance, and time to better grow their businesses. Empowered Hospitality solutions include a fully outsourced HR department, a la carte recruitment, compliance, and HR hotline services, training and education, and strategic advisement.
Again. So.
Here we are. So we're back, and after marinating a little bit, I think we're ready for a quick fire. So don't get nervous. Mike and I are going to ask you a couple questions, meant to be pretty fun and relaxed, but we want to learn a little bit about you.
This is the final R, right? We have recruit, retain, and now more relaxed.
This doesn't sound relaxing.
So I'm going to start with Kristen. Meal ordering. Are you going family style or to each his own?
Got you there.
Are we supposed to answer these fast?
Both.
Both? We have a lot of small plates.
Small plate. That wasn't even an option.
See? Yeah, I think that's A. That's a family style.
That's family style. Yeah. Hero, how about you?
I go family style too.
Okay.
Right. So you're not hoarding. I don't know. I'm kind of a hoarder. I mean, I don't eat meat. So a lot of, if I leave it to everyone else, next thing you know, it's like a barbecue going on and then I can't eat anything. So I have to always kind of keep in the back of my mind, I got to protect my little zone, you know?
So you're a selfish diner.
Pretty much. Yeah. Don't touch my freaking plate.
All right. Next question. Favorite after dinner drink, Kristen?
Doreen's whispering in her ear. If it's not wine, you're
Doreen
in trouble.
Doreen has a suggestion
orange
for you.
Orange wine. But that, it's confusing because that's pre-dinner, during dinner, after dinner.
Pretty much.
I mean, it services all of those needs.
Yes, you can have it at all those.
Orange wine is having a moment.
Orange wine is having a moment.
It's very 2019, maybe even 2020. It might be ahead of its time. We'll see.
There's going to be so much orange wine in Montauk.
Mm-hmm. Hero, how about you? Are you also a fan of orange wine?
I like orange wine too, but maybe strong espresso.
Interesting.
All about business. He has to get back to work.
I know.
Wow. Mike?
I'm a Sambuca guy. A nice, really chilled Sambuca. Yeah, I'm European. I can't help it.
I have to say, I'm a bit of a whiskey lover. So.
Ooh, wow.
Be a nice, nice bourbon.
Oh, very nice. Yep. What else? How about this one? Culinary R&D / inspiration. Solo or group effort? How do you like to get inspired, Hero?
R&D is, of course, group effort, yeah. Because it's one of the key is passion to the concept of the food that you're eating. And I've been going to thousands of restaurants myself around the world. And I try to take photos and videos and show it to the chef. Hey, this is a great, you should try it on our menus. But if the person is not experiencing, then Hero is talking another dishes from out, you know, different countries. Mm-hmm. So it's important that I stop doing that. I always tell employees to go to these five restaurants and these are five dishes I want you to try and see what you think.
Is there anything new that you've discovered in your recent travels?
I think we've been experienced high demand of Italian and also Mediterranean concept. I think they're a little bit shifting to Asians. I've seen it a little bit more Chinese and Vietnamese and Koreans. And these Asian exotic dishes are, I think it's getting very popular.
No, that's a good point. I think to some degree, I wouldn't say playing it safe, but having a cuisine like the Italian or Mediterranean that is very, it's non-polarizing, right? It pretty much everyone likes it pretty much, has been the trend for many years now. And I think moving to something a little bit more intricate, right? And some flavors that people aren't used to day to day, I think it's a good trend coming up.
Yeah, Kristen. I tend to go out there to look for inspiration, but it's not just the food, it's the entire experience.
Mm-hmm, the vibe.
It's the vibe. It's the wine list, the cocktail list, the decor, and the food. So it has to kind of all hit all those things to really inspire me to be a favorite restaurant. Right now, for me, Franchette is like a favorite.
Really?
Oh, I love it.
Oh, my, the duck frites? I can't stop eating the duck frites at Franchette.
I think insane. It's so cute how they have the oysters with the little sausages with it. It's so a great idea. Like, you know, you always want something extra with your oysters.
Great place.
Right? A great design, great team.
Cocktail list, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Kristen, you have something special coming up soon too, right?
I do. We're opening another Selros in Montauk on June 15th.
Nice. So exciting.
Yeah, we'll be there all season.
Congrats.
So, thank you. We're really looking forward to it.
It's going to be a great addition to Montauk. I think it's needed.
Mm. Can't wait to visit.
Rivers of orange wine, among other things. Very nice. And Hiro, I don't know if you had anything you want to share as far as any projects in the pipeline or anything that people can get excited about, if you want to share. Yeah.
We're always busy running 20 restaurants, but we see that the food hall is one of the very important experience food and beverage outlet. And we've seen a lot in New York, but if you look at a national, I think there's still this almost Netflix of food hall. Mm-hmm. You know, food hall is essentially, you have a 15, 17 different variety of contents that expressing their food. And this business model is continued to grow in the next 3 to 5 years. So we're also working on a few projects that the different theme. You saw the one in Hudson Yard, the Spanish theme. I think the Asian theme is coming, and there's a variety of themed food hall will be popping up in the next few years, and we're working on one of those projects.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people were coining that as like a 2018 phenomenon, and it was kind of be over. I really looked at it as something that's going to stick around. It makes a lot of sense, right? From a cost perspective, from an option perspective, where people can go and have different things in that price point, makes sense.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Thank you both so much for being here with us tonight. It was fantastic to hear your impressions, to learn a little more about your businesses. So
we look forward to,
thank you for sharing.
Yeah, spending time in Montauk and obviously continuing to visit Plan Dosi's concepts
throughout the country
and around the world. I want to go to Bali. I want to go everywhere.
I'm in.
Anyway, you can catch this interview, past and future ones, at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Spotify. And until next time, remember, love your staff and they will love you back.
True.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.